Welcome to the CX, AI, and Outsourcing Podcast, a show dedicated to the people, technology, and economics that are shaping the customer support industry. My name is John Walter, and today we have a conversation with Jennifer Ashman from the consulting firm CX Amplified. Jennifer advises companies on all aspects of customer experience. But for today's conversation, we focus narrowly on customer journey mapping and providing customers with omnichannel support. Like most good things in life, executing an omnichannel support strategy is challenging. There are a lot of moving parts. You are allowing a single customer to contact your business through various channels: online chat, text messages, phone calls, emails, social media, each time communicating with different employees, and all the while maintaining a single company narrative. Moreover, all the data from these various communications need to be captured, organized, and utilized by the next employee that interacts with the customer. But the time, thought, and resources required to accomplish omnichannel support are worth it. As we discuss on the show, omnichannel support greatly increases the customer experience and saves costs through efficient issue resolution. If, after listening to this podcast, you would like to learn more about Jennifer's work, please visit her website, cxamplified.com. Now, let's get started. Jennifer Ashman, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today. We've had a few conversations so far about your work with journey mapping with clients, and more recently about omnichannel support. And that's a topic that you hear a lot about. And I'm excited to talk with you to see your insight on how companies are doing well with it and in certain use cases, and hear your overall perspective.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the invitation to chat.
Yes. So let's first start with talking about your work in journey mapping. Can you give a bird's eye view about what you do?
Sure. Right now, I am the principal of CX Amplified, which is kind of a boutique consulting firm that focuses on customer experience. So focused, and I know sometimes there's the relationship between customer service and customer experience, which is certainly extremely closely connected. From a customer experience standpoint, my work has been involved in a more holistic sense of the end-to-end customer experience and designing experiences that meet and or exceed expectations. So I've had the good fortune of working within organizations and with other partners in organizations, trying to first get a better understanding of their current experience. And then secondly, of course, taking insights from tools such as journey maps to identify ways to strengthen what customers really value and or create or improve opportunities to make it even better.
Very cool. So when you're doing this type of work for a client, how is it performed? How is your work done?
Well, I can tell you at a higher level, I guess, there's, I'll say, four broad steps, if you will, to creating a journey map. And I guess this is probably a good place to pause first, just to level set on how I define journey map, how many people define journey maps. So when you think about a journey map, it's a visual. It is literally usually a visual perspective of the customer's end-to-end experience with your product or service. So oftentimes you see them as posters on a wall. They can be presented and designed beautifully. They can also be Excel documents. But the power to a journey map is it's looking beyond a transaction, and it's looking at the customer's broader experience. For a quick example, because I just did it the other day, I have booked a vacation for spring, which I'm very excited about. But if you think about...
Where to, if you don't mind me asking? I'm curious.
Oh, Florida.
Nice, nice. Beautiful state.
A note to your listeners, I live in Michigan. So it's a whole different universe going from Michigan to Florida.
Yes.
So excited for that. But, you know, when you think about something like going on a vacation, from a customer experience perspective, it's more than just checking in at the hotel. It's that broader journey. It's that deciding that I'm taking one. It's determining what my options are, where that might be. You know, the arrival and enjoyment of that stay is a heavy influencer, but then there's that wrapping up going home. So from a journey mapping perspective, it's, in that example, understanding the end-to-end experience and capturing that from the customer's perspective. So it's not what the company feels is happening. It's that lens and that voice of the customer coming through by way of that map. So I thought it'd be important to kind of level, I guess, arrive at that definition just for clarity of what we mean by a journey map.
Yes, and that's important to point out. You know, I work in the call center aspect of the customer journey. I help companies outsource to call centers to help them handle volume customer support. And so you're handling, or you're helping the companies to understand the relationship with all customers in all interactions, not just those that end up talking with a customer support agent. It's just every customer.
That's a good question. I guess that feeds into, you know, the process of creating a journey map, with the first step being defining the journey that you want to understand, that you want to map. So when you think about journey mapping, it's a customer experience tool. So depending upon the tool and the insights you need, you build accordingly. So you could create a journey map, for example, that would be a higher level end-to-end. What does taking a vacation look like? And it could start like I just described. But you could also look at a very small piece of a larger journey or experience. So for example, renting a car, you know, that's part of this broader experience, but you can create a journey map that drills deep and says, what happens when a customer goes to rent a car from end to end and go into that experience? From a call center perspective, you could certainly capture, you know, a customer specific scenario by way of a journey map. What kinds of things are driving customers to the call? How do they arrive at, or how do they decide how they want to get a question answered? And what might their options be to do it? So from that process perspective with developing a journey map, that step one is define the journey that you want to better understand. And step two really is understanding the customers who are having that journey. So, you know, you may have, and if I lean on that vacation analogy, you may have, you know, a parent with two children taking a vacation, checking into a hotel, for example. You can have a couple celebrating their 30th wedding anniversary, checking into the same hotel. They're going to expect different experiences because they're two very different kinds of customers. So kind of step two in this experience is defining the kind of journey you want to understand. And step two is what kind of a customer, what type of customer do you want to get a better understanding of? And this is where certainly data comes into play. This is where customer insights have a heavy role in influencing that foundation and defining that scenario. You know, and then step three is the literal work of the exciting part, which is creating the map itself. And this really drills into thinking about those high-level stages and that broader experience, capturing what the customer's doing, what they expect at each stage, what channel they're using at each stage to accomplish those things, and really capturing that emotional component, again, all coming from the voice of the customer through their lens.
Very interesting. And I want to go back and talk for a second about something you said about segmentation, you know, looking at specific groups of customers based on certain characteristics and following their different journeys because they might have different expectations. And you hear a lot about that in the marketing world, right? Especially with the rise of social media advertising, where you can target based on demographics. So there's an ability to, and a practice of tracking, once you bring that customer in, tracking their journey through their interaction with the company and perhaps providing tailored interactions with them that are most suitable based on those demographics or characteristics that they may have. Is that correct?
Yes, and I guess I would add to that that demographics, geographics are certainly great foundational pieces of information. You know, depending on the product or service that we're talking about, you know, that becomes a critical differentiator. So that's great foundational work for companies that have market segmentation data that'll go a little bit deeper. And those insights can certainly be powerful and influential in deciding or determining, you know, that journey experience and, you know, helping to capture that customer lens. I think this is where qualitative research has a very powerful role to play in that. And we could probably think of examples where, you know, there could be two customers that fit the same demographic, but, you know, there could be someone that's, maybe I'll call out myself. I am not the most tech savvy person on the planet, but my mother is, and we're in two very different demographics. But now we're getting into, you know, behaviors, attitudes, those qualitative components where, you know, having customer interviews, conducting focus groups, when you're talking about brick and mortar establishments, observational behaviors, there are other qualitative measures that you can implement to really create an in-depth perspective of your customers and leverage that to get into more of the nuances, especially when it comes to customer service, channels, how they want to interact, where they want to go to ask questions, and how they want a company to help them.
Very cool. So kind of turning a corner now to talk about one of the primary topics of conversation here is on omnichannel support. How do you see omnichannel support interacting with your customers, clients, and the benefits and that you've seen derived from it? I want us to steer in that direction. But before we get there, let's just start by defining omnichannel support. how do you define omnichannel, in particular, in distinguishing it from what some may call multi-channel support?
Sure. I think omnichannel support is really powerful, and it's getting to a place that, you know, where customers just expect it. It's powerful, but it's essentially where, you know, you're an organization that has multiple channels available to a customer, but in such a way that each channel is connected and coordinates with each other so that the customer has a seamless experience. And, you know, tying it back to journey maps, the customer has a seamless experience across that journey, regardless of what channel they use to interact with a company, whether it's to ask questions, complete a transaction, follow through on an order, or anything along those lines. But, you know, when it's done correctly, the customer feels that there's this relationship that's happening between them and the organization, that they know them because they're able to pop in and out throughout the journey, throughout channels, and not have to start over again, which is what a multi-channel approach or multi-channel support consists of, where a company may have multiple channels available, but they're siloed in nature. So if I start down the path of an inquiry via email and then decide to call, they never know what was sent in the email. I'm starting over again. It's disjointed.
Correct. So going back to the example you had with you and your mom. So let's say if you're going on a trip with your mom, you're going to be the one who calls customer service on the phone, and then your mom might be the one who's downloaded the app for the hotel and is interacting through chat. And so regardless of which channel is being used, all the data is being captured and is allowing a seamless experience in the event that your mom tells you how awesome this app is and that you need to download it and you choose to. and then your interactions on the app are going to include the prior data from the prior conversations you had leading up to your stay. And so from a journey mapping perspective, you're creating one net to catch all of the data that's coming in, it sounds like. And it gives you more versatility and flexibility to be able to address customer demands, but also more insight on how to address those demands quickly and efficiently, because you might already have intel that you may need to resolve the issue from a prior communication.
Sure. No, I think that omnichannel approach is so powerful in that, and I've heard the distinction between that and multi-channel as being, you know, multi-channel is more transaction oriented, whereas omnichannel is more relationship building. And I think that's a huge distinction that you see whether you're using you know, chat or text or lo and behold, email. I mean, there are environments now where, you know, you could run the whole spectrum, where you could go into a store, look at some items, leave the store, check the same store's online products and services, put some things in the shopping cart, leave the shopping cart behind in the website, and watch and wait, and they'll follow up with you via an email. We saw you left some things in the shopping cart. Let us tell you how we'll deliver it to you. They're trying to pull and hold on to that relationship. And then there are follow-throughs that come after that, where it could be, you know, your order has shipped. We'll link you to UPS. Here's how to track it, to follow it all the way through to the end. And then there are many companies that wrap up that specific experience with a survey. Tell us about your experience. So it's very powerful. And knowing we were having this conversation, you know, I did a little bit of research just to see. We have, I think you and I have this suspicion that omnichannel is important. And there are quite a few facts out there that validate it. I found that, just to share, there's a report called The State of the Connected Customer. And their research found that 78% of customers have used multiple channels to start and complete a transaction. There's a Harvard study that found 73% will use it in their shopping journey, and 90% expect it to be seamless. So I think that, and numbers can go from there, but I think there's a place now that, from a customer perspective, it's just expected that is the case, that you will come with me and I will not have to start over. And we're going to foster this relationship that, you know, that makes it easy for me to do business with you, and over time makes it easy for you to anticipate what my needs will be, to deliver an experience that's even better in the future.
Absolutely. And that's interesting how you draw the two terms, transactional and relational, because it really is, when you're interacting with a brand these days, you have the opportunity to make it very relational, kind of like you would with a relative or a friend. So you want to communicate with somebody, you can send them a text message and it's okay. Or you can call them, you know, contact them on social media. And it's okay if you try to call somebody and they text you back real quick and say, "Hey, I'm busy. Can I call you back in 30 minutes?" Right? That's fine if a friend does that. And sure, I think it's fine if a brand does that. And omnichannel kind of creates that type of environment where you can communicate and direct conversations in different avenues and makes it more of like a relationship. But what I think is very interesting about trying to call multi-channel service as transactional is that you typically think of something being transactional as being more efficient and economical and serving a business purpose. You know, you'll refer to somebody who's always trying to close on sales leads and is going one after the other without building the relationship as being a transactional person. And sometimes they're discredited for not building relationships over the long term, but they're actually doing some good income generating activities in the short term. So there's some benefit to it. But in this case, the relationship and the economic advantage of omnichannel is really totally outweighs multi-channel. Multi-channel is just a less effective way of doing the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the costs tremendously add up. Just looking at it from my perspective, as you know, you're outsourcing large volumes of calls, just repeating information, right? Just, you know, if you're adding 30 seconds to 1 million phone calls, that adds up a lot, right? And so it's really, there's an economic aspect that really stands out to me. I think any investment that's made to allow for omnichannel support and allow these types of the transfer of data and communications, the customers like it because it's more efficient. You're resolving the customer's issues quicker, which, you know, the other side of that coin is it's less expensive for the business. Efficiency is cost savings.
Sure. And I think, you know, an important factor to that is, you know, customer expectations over time. So, and COVID certainly had a role to play there in terms of customers getting much more comfortable doing a lot more online than they had ever done. But I think at the same token, you know, expectations have risen from experiences customers have had with certain companies, and Amazon comes to mind first, where it's very easy to build a relationship and and thusly very easy to spend more money on Amazon, because they're capturing that information, they're giving you recommendations, they make it extremely easy to purchase, they're holding on to earlier conversations and shopping engagements, etc. And you know, the reason I'll call them out, Apple's another example in terms of if you happen to call them with a problem and it needs to be resolved in a store, when you go to the store, they know what the phone call was about. So you think of some of those bigger brands, whether it's digital or that in-person component, and they influence customer expectations. So that, you know, when you think about whatever company you are, whatever industry you're in, you know, customers do not compare you against others in your industry. They compare you against the other experiences they have throughout the day.
That's a very good point.
So if I can make a transaction with Amazon in 3 clicks, but you're asking me to take 10 clicks to get something accomplished, for me, that might not be an ideal experience because my expectations have been set by another company and they're higher. And that can influence things because, you know, when you tie it back to journey mapping, there can be potential for someone in an organization to say, the process works. Like from our internal view, the process works. And maybe it's an online experience. Maybe it's a a purchase experience online. They could say, we have zero defects. Every step works. There's no error, which is fabulous. But if you look at it from a journey mapping perspective and the customer's lens, the customer might not be satisfied. The reason being, it's 10 steps and they think it should be 3. And so it's a different lens to consider in terms of there are expectations that are high and there are numbers that reinforce the fact that this is what customers want. It's so much more, to your point, you know, cost effective, cost efficient to retain and drive loyalty than it is to go out and conquest new customers as well, that anything you can do to add that relational component so that you have a better understanding of them, they feel more comfortable doing business with you, and it's easier for both parties at a high level to maintain that kind of relationship.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was recently reading Fred Reichheld's book, Winning on Purpose, which is excellent. For anybody in the CX space, I'd highly recommend it. Puts on great data about the benefit of having a high net promoter score, the NPS score. And it really, you know, the goal of that score is to measure customer loyalty. And so you're looking at the benefit that companies have from having customers that return again and again and again. And he draws some good data on the benefit of return customers, how they are more lucrative. Return customers are more lucrative than bringing in brand new customers. And that's why we need people like you, Jennifer, the professionals who sometimes we can see things on our own that seems like they're working great, but in reality, there might be obstacles our customers are facing that we're not even aware of. And I like your point a lot about, you know, we're not always competing against others in our industry. Sometimes you're competing against the biggest companies in the world. Apple, for example, your customer's interacting on an iPhone all day, every day, and which is just the most wonderful device on earth, in my opinion, when it comes to efficiency. And that's the experience that they're comparing you to. On the topic of omnichannel support, you know, I want to talk about a tactic that I've seen some companies use to try and both preemptively delight their customers, you know, communicate with their customers at a time where it shows that the company cares about what the customer is going through and is in tune with the customer's experience and interaction with the brand. And while at the same time, perhaps unbeknownst to the customer, because the customer's enjoying it, but it's actually steering the conversation into a more cost-effective channel. An example that I'd like to talk about is in the hotel industry. We're starting to see some brands preemptively send text messages to customers at times where there are typically high probability of interaction between the customer and the brand. Is this something that you've seen within your work? And do you have any thoughts on this?
What I've seen, generally speaking, but definitely have examples to your more specific reference, is that one of the benefits of journey mapping, of having that richer understanding of the customer from that broader end-to-end experience, is that you can get a better flavor for not only where they're at and what they're doing, but you know, what are their channel preferences? And at that same time, what things are they trying to accomplish? And those questions can pop up before, you know, what you might call the transaction or the hotel check-in. You know, so how can you anticipate, based on what you learned about the customer, by going through that rich exercise of developing a journey map? So if you think about that hotel example, you know, and I'm going to reference some happy memories from my last vacation, your typical traveler is going to do some things ahead of time, right? If you are that hotel, there are some things you might be able to do to help the customer in those earlier steps. So a quick text to say, you know, the forecast for the day you check in is expected to be 79 and sunny. Pack your sunscreen. Or while you're checking in or after you check in, just so you know, here's the Wi-Fi code. Or if you come in early, you know, the concierge counter is to the left. We're happy to take your luggage until your room is ready. Like anticipating the kinds of things a customer is going to ask and think about before they even get to the hotel. Those are really nice surprise and delights that really the customer will likely have those questions for. And in lieu of having staff ready to answer those frequently asked questions, you can have that proactive approach of, you know, let us give you the information we know you need ahead of time and or at the moment that you need it. And I think that's really powerful.
It is very powerful, and it's very inexpensive for a company to send a text message, right? And especially in comparison to receiving a call, big difference in cost there. And a lot of these questions that guests may have, let's just stick with the hotel. And I like the hotel example because we have an Airbnb property that I self-manage. I find that it's very beneficial to, you know, before they arrive, tell them how many K-cups are going to be included with the Keurig that's at the place, right? So, you know, to let them know. Right. It's like, if you have big coffee drinkers, you might want to pack some extra coffee, and, you know, small things like that. A lot of times they would not even think to contact the host or a company to ask these types of questions, but you're actually delivering value. Like for your example, the weather. Nobody calls the hotel beforehand to ask, what's the weather going to be when I arrive, you know? But you're delivering value as a company to your customer in a way that's going to do nothing but delight and please them. And also, the side benefit of just delivering value, which is always good, that's the essence of brand building and building brand equity, is just delivering value to people over time, big and small in a variety of ways. But the side benefit of that is that you're opening the line of communication in a way that's very cost effective. You know, chat is a lot less expensive than voice. You know, agents can handle 2, sometimes 3 chats at a time effectively. With a lot of AI empowerment, agents are starting to even handle more. And a lot of these chats can even be handled entirely by AI. And so the ability to steer communications towards chat has a lot of benefit to companies. And so I'm curious, with your experience, when you received that text message, did it leave the communication open? So you're receiving information about your stay, but then you could also place, you know, orders, like room service orders and things of that nature through the text message?
In 2 recent personal examples, one was very personal as far as, we're checking in to make sure you're okay. Welcome to the hotel. Let us know if you need anything, please respond to the chat if you need anything. And so there was the opportunity for that real time response chat conversation that they were prepared to handle if I had any questions or needed any assistance with anything. In a different scenario I recently received, it was a chat that was a little more generic in nature. It wasn't in the hospitality space, but it was a chat with a link that, you know, I think in lieu of providing a lot of copy in a chat where you're kind of, you're losing the benefit of chat when the chat gets too long. But there may be that reason where the customer might need that information or might not know the information is available, where the chat was brief with a link to more. So you may be a customer that's done business with us in the past, in which case you understand what comes next or you understand what your options are. But if you're new, I think the chat was more along the lines of a welcome, thank you, you know, here's how to contact us if you have a question, but here's a link to click to learn more. So it was, you know, it was one step removed from that live conversation, but still recognizing, and many companies recognize that, you know, more often than not, customers are going to look at their phone and look at the chat much more frequently than they're going to open up an email.
Absolutely.
And much more frequently than they might pop onto a website. So there is that, I don't know what the temptation is. There's a customer demand to engage and leverage that channel more. But then there's also that strategic component of doing it in a way that adds value for the customer, that they're not just getting, you know, they're not just getting that chat that's not actionable or not needed and valued. And I think therein lies that, you know, that component that companies need to be sensitive to.
Absolutely. You have to be very sensitive because text message is more personal than email. I personally went through the practice of clearing out over 5,000 unread emails in my inbox this weekend, in my personal email. And because it just keeps building up, you know, I just kind of let it happen. And then today I open it back up again, thinking I'd only have a few. I had about 50 emails. Most of them are just like random stuff. So I just go through and unsubscribe. But we get inundated with emails. Text messages are more personal, but we're also more sensitive to text messages because they can come across as invading that personal space that we've protected and sanctioned off just for friends and very important communications. But then I've seen a few, in the healthcare industry recently, I was interacting with a doctor's office that was really trying to steer as much communication as possible towards chat. And that's, you know, highly protected information. So, of course, you're not interacting totally through text. A lot of it is, you know, you start with a text and then they have a link to a secure portal. And then from there, you're able to communicate freely and schedule and cancel appointments. So far, I've been seeing this mostly in the hospitality sector. And because I think that's where you have the strongest use case. Of course, you have like very, very predictable arrival patterns of communications, arrival patterns of people and communications that come with those people. And then also the cost savings, because in the hospitality sector, you know, it's the service level is higher, meaning, you know, in the outsourcing world, you look at the service level, which is in a nutshell, how quickly you answer phone calls. And the rule of thumb is to have 80% of calls answered within 30 seconds. But that is not quick enough in the hotel industry when you have people up in their rooms trying to call down to order food or blankets or whatever they may need. You don't want them sitting on their room phone for that long of time. And so I think we see a lot of use cases so far in the hotel industry, but I look forward and I hope and I wish to see more companies using this strategy of text communications in a variety of industries. I know I, as a customer, would enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't disagree with that. I think, you know, one call out that I'm mindful of, likely because I've seen what happens when it's not happening, I guess, would be, you know, thinking about it from that journey perspective, thinking about an omni-channel strategy also requires keeping that lens of across channels in terms of the tone, the personality that's represented in these different channels for the company, so that if we're talking about omnichannel as a great way, and an expected way by customers anyway, to build a relationship, then that relationship has to maintain a certain personality, a brand, a tone from the organization. So that, for example, if a company decides, you know what, we need to update our website. We need to make sure that, you know, it's a little easier to consume. We're going to change some language. Maybe we're going to redefine some programs that we offer. That's fabulous. And the website likely would look amazing. But if future conversations, whether it's through chat, don't mirror that language or that approach, or if a customer calls in and the menu options or descriptions do not align with the language used in the website, then you're going to create some disconnects. So thinking about making improvements or additions to the channels, to the touch points you're applying to the journey or across the journey, ensuring that there's that consistent relationship, that tone, that personality, stays intact and or gets stronger across all of those channels. And so that's one thing that, you know, I am cognizant of when folks start talking about that web redesign, or we're going to change the call queue, or, you know, the language or the messaging when folks dial in, to ensure that if that experience changes, ideally, you know, you would expect it's changing in response to customer feedback, in response to customer insights indicating that's what they're looking for. You know, this would create a better experience. Just make sure that those insights are implemented not just in one channel, but across channels where it makes sense.
That's an interesting point you make. It reminds me of a time back when I was in law school. I was on a moot court team, and we had to write this massive brief. And it took four different people writing, you know, we broke it up into sections. And so each person had a different section. And then we had a coach who made us have a general editor who would go back through and make sure it was all written in one voice. Mm-hmm. Because just for the benefit of the judge, for the recipient who was receiving the communication, that it was more pleasant to read, right? And that's the role that you're playing in helping brands have smooth interactions with their customers. I really appreciate your work. I really admire it. And I look forward to collaborating with you in the future on trying to help companies to have a holistic view. Because a lot of the work I do is looking just at the customer support, in particular, high volume support that's being outsourced. And I really look forward to in the future being able to collaborate so that the companies that we're working with are able to provide an experience to their customers, whether they're going in to reach the call center or just from the, you know, reaching their destination without any issues at all, are able to have a smooth and wonderful experience. And to the extent they do have to reach support, it's done in a way that is a pleasure to the extent possible to the customer and is handled in the most cost-effective way by the client.
Well, it's I certainly look forward to more collaboration as well. I can, your comments just bring to mind one thing that that I find really fulfilling and powerful with the exercise that is journey mapping, is that oftentimes, and this is more typical than not with larger organizations, you know, companies have silos. They're large, and you have a marketing team and you have a product team. Maybe you have a digital team. And one of the, I'll say, requirements of journey mapping is you're looking at it from an experiential perspective. And in order to do that, you need stakeholders from those teams to be in the same room, because from a customer's perspective, they don't see when they're interacting with marketing or with product, they're having an experience. And so having those different stakeholders in a room, talking about the customer needs, what they're doing along these stages in the journey, one, it can be very eye-opening, if you will, for different stakeholders to see the whole experience beyond just the role that they play in it. But in addition to that, there is some fantastic brainstorming that can happen when everyone is in the room and you're not using the words I and you. So it's not my department and your department, it's our customer. And what can we do to make our customer have a better experience? And so if the call center is fielding a certain question or two on a consistent level, you know, could marketing, could digital recommend it? Well, we solve for that question further up in their experience. We can do something with that here. Let's collaborate on that, looking at it through the customer's lens. And so the magic can happen just putting those stakeholders in the room and, you know, having them collaborate and work together to visually map out what that customer journey is. And then it's amazing, you know, what a group of bright people and a journey map can do to kind of reimagine what might we do? You know, how do we double down on the things we do really well for our customers? And how do we, you know, how do we create things that they don't expect that would surprise and delight? And where we might have some weak spots or gaps, you know, let's come up with some original solutions. And that's where the magic happens. So there's a lot of opportunity there.
Awesome. And I'm sure they all appreciate having you there to motivate them to get in the same room, right? So now it's almost like having a counselor to get everyone together and to talk things through and to address the hard issues.
No, I am. I'm grateful for those opportunities because it's fantastic to watch experts work, experts collaborate, and everyone sharing that common mission of we can take that customer's experience to the next level. We can make this best in class. And so I love being a part of that.
That's wonderful. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today. I've enjoyed this conversation, and I look forward to continue talking on other channels. We'll have our own omnichannel discussion going on through LinkedIn, phone calls, and text, and trying to, just continue improving customer experiences.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to chat. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.